Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. I'm your reader, Mary Francis. On the front page of the Gazette today, Cedar Rapids Police, son kills mom, dad, and sister. Indie film brings lights, camera, action. Twitter alerts help find people or that helped find that helped people find vaccines ends. The New Eye Children's Hospital again ranks high nationally. In the weather for the Cedar Rapids area today, we have a high of 85, low of 63, sunny skies. Looks like tomorrow there's a thundercloud. Thursday, high of 92, low of 69 with some thunder, which we desperately need the rain that comes with it. So the top story on the front of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, Cedar Rapids Police, son kills mom, dad, and sister. 20-year-old faces three counts of first-degree murder. This is by Kat Russell of the Gazette. A 20-year-old son shot his sister, mother, and father to death, authorities said Tuesday night, after a day of investigating the discovery of bodies inside a northeast Cedar Rapids home. Alexander Ken Jackson, age 20, has been arrested and faces three counts of first-degree murder, a public safety spokesman said. The spokesman identified the three murder victims as Jan Perry Jackson, age 61, Melissa Fern Jackson, age 68, and Sabrina Hannah Jackson, age 19. Cedar Rapids police responded to a call at 8:23 a.m. about a possible shooting inside the house at 4414 Oak Leaf Court, Northeast. Police did not say who placed the call. There, officers found the father, mother, and sister dead of gunshot wounds. They also found Alexander Jackson with a gunshot wound to the foot, the police describe as non-life-threatening. He was taken to Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital for treatment and was arrested afterward and booked Tuesday night into the Linn County Jail. He does not have an adult criminal record in Iowa, according to online court records. Police did not provide a possible motive for the shooting. The bodies were found inside a home that sits at the end of a cul-de-sac in a neighborhood that people who live there describe as quiet until Tuesday morning. None of the neighbors interviewed said they heard any gunfire, but some saw police vehicles arriving. Anita Hansen, who lives across the street a few doors down, said she had seen the Jackson couple out walking a dog before. About 8:15 a.m., Hansen said she was getting ready for the day when she heard a siren approaching and looked out her bathroom window. She said she saw an officer get out of his police car holding a rifle, and I just thought, whoa, this isn't like someone fell or had a heart attack or something, she said. Over the next several minutes, more and more police vehicles arrived, including an ambulance, a fire truck, and a police dog unit. At first, she said she was alarmed because she didn't know if there was an imminent safety threat. But as the activity started to focus on the Jackson house, she realized something bad must have happened there. Another neighbor, Priti Parikh, said her husband was leaving for work about 8:30 a.m. when he saw all the police cars and came back inside to tell her that something was happening next door. I came out and all I saw were police cars. They were all lined up right there, she said, gesturing to the curb in front of her house and the house next door. At first, she said she couldn't figure out which house police were responding to, but as more cars showed up and filled the cul-de-sac, she realized it was the Jackson house. They've been good neighbors, she said. They are really good people, nice people. Real estate records show the Jacksons bought the house in 2011. And then there's a photo of the brick home. A home is sealed with caution tape Tuesday on Oak Leaf Court, Northeast in Cedar Rapids. Next story from the front page. Twitter alerts that helped people find vaccines ends. The Twitter account that earlier this year started alerting Iowans to available COVID-19 vaccine appointments, garnering it thousands of followers in the midst of a chaotic vaccine rollout, has stopped sending the notices. The Iowa City man behind the account, at IAVaccines-alerts, turned off the alerts Monday, stating that they had served their purpose. The barriers that we have yet to overcome are not ones that can be solved on my Twitter account, said Brian Finley, who created the account and the automated programming behind it. The account launched March 10 is an individual's attempt to create a centralized scheduling tool when one was not available from the state government. Finley, an app developer, created a program that aggregated data from various websites on available appointments. Once a vaccine appointment opened in Iowa, his Twitter account automatically tweeted out the specifics to tens of thousands of followers. His idea quickly gained popularity in Iowa. The state opened a 211 call center, helping Iowans navigate the process of getting an appointment, but it did not establish a statewide centralized scheduling system. Finley opened up Twitter accounts with alerts for available appointments in four other states, including Nebraska, Minnesota, Missouri, and Illinois. Following his announcement on Twitter that the account would stop tweeting out alerts, Finley received dozens of responses praising the effort. Many thanked him for helping them find shots for their family and friends. "My entire Iowa family is vaccinated because you and your selfless efforts," wrote one Twitter user. Demand for the COVID-19 vaccine since has dropped sharply among Iowans, making the shot far more readily available than it was in the days when Finley started the alerts. Nowadays, walk-in appointments to get the shot are an option at many pharmacies and clinics across the state. As a result, Finley has not been contacted by anyone looking for an appointment in recent weeks. At this point, he said he believes Iowans who have not received their COVID vaccine would not seek out his account for help. "There's nothing technical or any cost coming out of my pocket, but now the hurdle is in education and convincing people to jump on board with this vaccine," Finley said. "I'm just a dude with a Twitter account. We need people that can change minds." In recent weeks, counties across the state have turned down their allocations of shots from the state. Early this past month, Iowa turned down nearly three-quarters of vaccine doses available to the state from the federal government because of that drop in demand. Yet the percentage of vaccinated Iowans is still below the rate needed to reach herd immunity against the novel coronavirus. On Tuesday, nearly 44% of all Iowans were fully vaccinated against the virus, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health. The vaccine effort has shifted from meeting the huge demand for the shot to encouraging more Iowans to take the vaccine, according to local public health officials. While some Iowans still face barriers to obtaining a shot, such as lack of transportation or language, public health officials say misinformation about the COVID-19 vaccine has played a role in preventing people from seeking out the shot in some parts of the state. Finley said that effort is not something he can contribute to with his Twitter accounts. "People who don't want the vaccine are not following my account," he said. The Twitter profile is still open, and Finley said he plans to keep the software in case there's a need for booster shots or the account can fill another need. Finley will be honored today at a Project Better Together event among other local leaders for their resiliency during the pandemic. Details for the event can be found at iCareATogether.com. The project is a collaboration between the Iowa City Area Business Partnership, the Iowa City Area Development Group, the Iowa City Downtown District, and Think Iowa City. And then it shows a photo of Brian Finley, a young man with short cropped hair, wearing a gray sweater and a black mask. And it says Brian Finley of Iowa City started a Twitter account that posted real-time search results for coronavirus vaccine appointment availability statewide. Finley turned off the Twitter alerts on Monday. Next story on the front page of the Gazette, UI Children's Hospital again ranks high nationally. This is by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. University of Iowa Healthcare's century-old Children's Hospital, which got a new name and a new $392.7 million building in 2017, again has placed in the top 50 nationally in 5 of 10 ranked specialties, according to U.S. News and World Report's Best Children's Hospital Report, released Tuesday. In addition to its national children's hospital rankings, U.S. News for the first time this year debuted state and regional children's hospital rankings, like it does for general acute care hospitals, including the UI hospitals and clinics. The UI Stead Family Children's Hospital, in the publication's first localized pediatric rankings, placed first in Iowa and number 15 in the Midwest, which includes its six border states of Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Missouri, Nebraska, and South Dakota, plus Kansas, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Michigan, and North Dakota. The top placers in the Midwest include the Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center at number one, with top-tier rankings in all 10 ranked specialties, Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus, Ohio at number two, and the Children's Hospital of Chicago, both of which also ranked in all 10 specialties. The UI Children's Hospital, like last year, placed among the top 50 in 5 of the 10 ranked specialties, gaining ground in 3 and slipping in 2. Neonatology earned the hospital's highest ranking this year at number 25. That's an improvement from last year's 32, but not yet on par with 2019's 16. Pediatric orthopedics also improved slightly to number 35 from last year's number 37, although shy of its number 29 ranking in 2019. Pediatric diabetes and endocrinology lost ground at number 41, down from 38 last year and 21 in 2019. Pediatric nephrology improved to 42. Last year it was 49, although still below 2019's 39. And the university's pediatric neurology and neurosurgery ranking slipped to 50 from 49 last year. After ranking nationally for years in pediatric cancer care, the UI Children's Hospital still didn't rank in the top 50 this year. It also remained unranked in pediatric urology, in which it ranked number 26 in 2019. U.S. News, in breaking down its decisions, which follow a methodology involving objective measures like patient outcomes, clinical resources, and also national reputation, publishes a scorecard showing why each hospital earned its specialty rankings. The UI Children's Hospital earned above average or excellent scores in many pediatric cancer considerations, but was average in its ability to prevent infections and its reputation with other physicians, for example. It fell short in similar categories in its urology scorecard, but achieved high reputation marks in categories like neonatology and nephrology. In formulating this year's rankings, U.S. News gathered relevant data from children's hospitals in early 2020 and from pediatric physicians and other healthcare organizations in 2021. Due to COVID-19, however, U.S. News did not repeat its data collection for children's hospitals in 2021, according to the publication. To continue to be ranked among the nation's best children's hospitals, particularly following a year in which the nation and the world faced a monumental health crisis, it's a testament to the dedication of our exceptional team, said UI Children's Hospital Chief Administrative Officer Pamela Johnson Carlson. This is a true honor and really points to our commitment to providing the top quality care our patients and families have come to expect from this team. The UI Stead Family Children's Hospital building includes 14 floors, 507,000 square feet of new construction. It's home to more than 200 pediatric physicians, surgeons, and dentists, and last year cared for over 77,000 children from all 99 Iowa counties, plus 46 states and 20 other countries. In a statement, Interim Physician-in-Chief Ava Tsalikian also served as interim chair and department executive officer of the Stead Family Department of Pediatrics, praising the campus's extraordinary team of physicians, nurses, researchers, and staff. Quote, "To continue to be included on this list of best hospitals is a point of pride for all our staff, and it sets the bar consistently high for future residents and staff," she said. U.S. News, which touts its rankings as helping families make healthcare decisions, cited COVID-19 in explaining its decision to debut state and regional pediatric lists. Quote, "We've grown to appreciate the value regional rankings could have for for families seeking hospital-based pediatric care, according to a news release. Such care often requires long-term follow-up, and extended travel affects the whole family. Not surprisingly, parents tend to seek pediatric hospital care close to home, often within the state where they reside, and occasionally a neighboring state. The COVID-19 pandemic has imposed unprecedented complications to travel, adding to the reasons that many families with sick children seek care close to home. And then it shows a photo of the exterior of the University of Iowa's Stead Family Children's Hospital. And the other story from the front page, indie film brings lights, camera, action. Dateline Cedar Rapids. 13 years ago this week, the Cedar River flooded Little Bohemia within 2 feet of its ceiling. On Tuesday, the corner restaurant and bar at 1317 3rd Street Southeast was flooded with 26 actors and crew members filming on location for Charcoal Skies. The six-figure independent film is about midway through shooting in various Cedar Rapids sites, from Time Check Park and Airbnbs to the Hard Drive Performance Center and Busby Wealth Strategies, which became a psychiatrist's office. Cast and crew also spent a day at the historic Old Cedar County Jail in Tipton, with a stop in Mount Vernon and route to film in a theater dressing room. Those might seem like unlikely spots for a drama about an 11-year-old boy with agoraphobia who holes up in his bedroom making art. His therapy for the anxiety disorder, however, tasks him with venturing outside his safety zone for at least part of every day. The script takes on lots of layers and turns through his journey, as well as that of his mother. According to the film's description, he experiences more than he bargained for. His difficult single mother finds a meaningful connection in an unexpected place. Quote, I would say the story is about community. People may not, and the community may not, necessarily like each other, but they will come together when there's a tragedy, especially when it involves a child, said screenwriter Beth Hindy of Cedar Rapids. She said that during a quick trip to the Little Bohemia shoot, where the long rustic bar fit her vision for the setting. The title reflects the way everybody feels like they're living underneath a dark sky and hoping they'll find something lighter, she said. By the end of the story, she added that everybody is, quote, starting to become what they really want to be. They've found that place within themselves that's really strong and really good, and they've started to believe in themselves, unquote. That's a lesson she has applied to the film, which has been 12 years in the making. It has weathered rewrites and the pandemic, and finally is on track for filming until June 26, with post-production slated to wrap in early 2022. It feels like I kind of sat on my dream for a long time, she said, and she and director Bill Cooper of Minneapolis are hoping the film can premiere next spring in Cedar Rapids. Now 60 years old and retired, Indy has always enjoyed writing. She took an introduction to film class at Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo years ago and began networking with the Iowa Digital Filmmakers Guild. She's written some shorter screenplays, but also spent 40 years in healthcare, primarily as a registered nurse. Her husband Dan retired after 44 years, including 35 in the mental health field. They've dipped into their savings to self-finance the film and are serving as executive producers. It's been a lot of ups and downs, he said. Setbacks and frustrations, she added. But after each day that the film crew gets done, it's been a little more relaxing and seeing that it's coming together now. We're really fortunate to have the people involved. More than 50 people are in the cast, with another 25 working behind the scenes, producing and directing to sound and cinematography. Many are Iowans, but the lead adult actors hail from Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York. Tuesday's shoot involved 26 people from the cast and crew, setting up lights, a camera, and monitors, then rehearsing and filming the scenes. Others kept order on the set. All worked up a sweat since the air conditioning was too loud to run, but trees lining the patio gave some breezy shade for the lunch break. The process is, quote, fun and difficult, said Braxton Thalberg, age 11 of Grinnell. He plays Justin Travers, the film's central character. His father, Wade, is an actor who knows Cooper. So Braxton has taken acting classes from Cooper in Minneapolis for 2 years. The young actor and his mother, Cecilia, are staying in Cedar Rapids, going back home when they have a couple of days off. Braxton said he's enjoying meeting new people and just having fun. The hardest part is, quote, the acting. Each night he receives, studies, and memorizes his dialogue for the next day. Cooper has been in film, video, and television for 40 years. He's been directing for about 15 years and continues to act, to teach acting, and run a film festival. This project, however, marks the first time he's directed a child in a lead role and the first time he's directed a gang fight and a drive-by shooting. Those are things I have not done before, he said, so I was glad to give that some of my artistic attention. He said he, quote, jumped at the chance to work on the film. The story is incredibly important now because it deals with a lot of mental health and learning to accept others and ourselves, he said. He has family in the area, and he's been to Cedar Rapids a couple of times in conjunction with film festivals. The city is not named in the film, but Cooper couldn't be more pleased with the reception here. Quote, Cedar Rapids has been fantastic, he said. The locations fit the story. The people and businesses have been incredibly accommodating. So for me, spending a month here is like going to adult summer camp. And then there are three photos showing the work on set, shows the actor working, or excuse me, the director working with the various actors. And then it shows the behind the camera shot of a cameraman getting ready to shoot a scene. Moving over to the Iowa Today page, at the top, trials reset for inmates charged with murder. One trial will be held in Jones County and the other in Lynn. This is from Trish Mahaffey of the Gazette, Dateline Anamosa. One of the inmates charged with killing an Anamosa prison officer and a registered nurse in March will now have a trial in August in Jones County, and the other inmate will have a trial in September in Lynn County. Michael Dutcher, age 28, over the weekend decided to waive his right to a speedy trial. His trial will start August 3rd and remain in Jones County District Court. Thomas Allen Woodard, age 39, over the weekend asked the court to continue his trial, which was previously set to start next Tuesday in Lynn County. His lawyers in the motion said they needed more time to take depositions, receive additional discovery, and review evidence. Assistant Iowa Attorney General Scott Brown and Jones County Attorney Christopher Lyons did not resist the motion. Sixth Judicial District Judge Faye Hoover reset Woodard's trial to September 21 in Lynn County District Court. Last Friday, during a hearing, Dutcher demanded his speedy trial and wanted the trial moved to another county. The continuance for Woodard wasn't filed until Saturday. Both men have pleaded not guilty to charges of first-degree murder, second-degree kidnapping, and attempted murder. The two inmates are accused of killing Correctional Officer Robert McFarlane, age 46, of Ely, and Nurse Lorena Schulte, age 50, of Cedar Rapids, during what authorities said was a failed attempt to escape from the Anamosa State Penitentiary on March 23rd of this year. According to court documents, the inmates are accused of attacking the two prison workers with hammers. McFarland and Schulte suffered severe head injuries. Another inmate, McKinley Roby, suffered injuries to his head while he attempted to help staff members. The assault started about 10 a.m. when Woodard and Dutcher went to the infirmary under the pretense of fixing something. The men had access to hammers and a metal grinder because they had checked them out from the prison maintenance area. They were being supervised by McFarland. And then it shows a photo of memorials placed near the front of the Anamosa State Penitentiary on March 24. Two Iowa prison nurses fired after they gave inmates too much COVID-19 vaccine. This is from Aaron Jordan of the Gazette, Dateline Fort Madison. The Iowa Department of Corrections has fired two nurses at the Iowa State Penitentiary at Fort Madison after they incorrectly gave 77 offenders overdoses of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine in April. As a result of a thorough investigation into the incident, the two nurses that were involved had their employment terminated, said department spokesman Cord Overton in an email on Tuesday. The terminations were first reported in the Des Moines Register. The mother of one of the inmates said the men received six times the recommended dose. The Pfizer vaccine is packaged as a concentrate that must be diluted with saline solution first, while some other vaccines do not need to be diluted. As soon as staff realized the error, they contacted the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention and Pfizer. Corrections staff have been monitoring the men since and said they have had the same side effects, arm soreness, body aches, fatigue, and fever, as others who got the correct dose of the vaccine. The nurses were put on leave pending the outcome of the investigation and then were eventually fired. Overton did not identify those nurses. Leaders of AFSCME Council 61, which represents many prison workers, said the error happened because of inadequate staff training leading up to the vaccinations. The Corrections Department reported on June 4 that more than 58% of people incarcerated in Iowa's prisons are fully vaccinated, while 62% have had one shot. The full vaccination rate among prison staff was 56% at that time. Smith, a Waterloo Democrat to run for governor. He's the first in his party to formally announce. And this is by Amy Rivers of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier. State Representative Roz Smith of Waterloo on Tuesday became the first Democrat to announce he's running for governor in 2022 in an attempt to unseat Republican Governor Kim Reynolds. Smith, who represents House District 62 in the Cedar Valley, made the announcement early Tuesday on social media with a video featuring a farmer, a teacher, his family, and others, including him, walking around downtown Waterloo with a focus on shoes. Quote, "I grew up with a military mom and a factory father," Smith says in the video about his parents. His parents are Elsie and the Reverend Belinda Creighton Smith. "They taught us faith, hard work, service to community, to show grace to people no matter where they come from or what shoes they wear." If more Democrats decide to run for the seat, a Democratic primary will be held next summer, with the election in November 2022. Smith, age 33, was first elected to the Iowa House in 2016, after longtime Democrat Representative Deb Barry stepped down. Smith was reelected in 2018 and 2020, and is currently the ranking member on the Education Committee. He also serves on the Agriculture, Information Technology, and Natural Resources Committees. He also is the founding member and current chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. He said on his website, which is rasforiowa.com, and that's R-A-S for Iowa.com, that he's a, quote, "proud native of East Waterloo, where he, his wife, and two children still live." But he noted, "he feels just as much at home in rural Iowa, where I spent my formative years hunting and fishing." Iowa State Auditor Rob Sand is also widely expected to enter the Democratic race, indicating he would announce his decision near Labor Day. The Republican Governors Association responded swiftly with a statement Tuesday, saying Reynolds is, quote, "battle-tested and has overseen one of the fastest economic recoveries from COVID," unquote. The statement called Smith a tax-and-spend liberal. Reynolds has not officially announced that she's running for re-election, but earlier this month, she batted down speculation that she would run for the U.S. Senate seat held by Chuck Grassley and told reporters she would make a re-election announcement soon. Smith's District 62, which encompasses the northern part of Waterloo as well as Evansdale, Elk Run Heights, and Raymond, is heavily Democratic. Smith bested Republican opponent Todd Obadahl with more than 63% of the vote in 2016. And ran unopposed in 2018 and 2020. Smith graduated from the University of Northern Iowa with a bachelor's degree in exercise science and master's degree in youth and human services. He's the state consultant for the nonprofit Communities in Schools. And that's the halfway point of the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, June 16, 2021. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. We're so glad to have you listening. You can also catch us if you happen to have Wi-Fi in your home and you're listening on a radio. You can give us a shout, and we could try to get you a better signal. We would provide an Amazon Echo Dot device that sometimes can get better reception. But again, that's only if you have Wi-Fi. If you have any questions or comments on this or any other program, you can give us a shout on the email iris@iowaradioreading.org or drop us a call at 877-404-4747. I'm your reader, Mary Frances, and now let's turn to the obituaries for today. Sally Edwards, age 82, of Anamosa, died Saturday, June 12th at the Anamosa Care Center following a brief illness. Funeral services, Saturday, June 19, 11 a.m. at the Wayne Zion Lutheran Church in rural Monticello. The Reverend Rodney Blumel will officiate. Burial will be Oakwood Cemetery in Monticello. Friends may call from 9 a.m. to the time of services at the church. Sally Ann Catlett, that's C-A-T-L-E-T-T, was born April 13, 1939 in Anamosa, the daughter of Gail and Selma Antons Catlett. She graduated from Olin High School in 1957. She then attended Iowa State Teachers College in Cedar Falls. June 4, 1961, she married Lee Edwards at the church. The couple would spend nearly 52 years together before Lee's death in 2013. She was employed as an elementary teacher in the Springville Community Schools and, after 35 years of service, retired in 2001. She was a longtime member of the church, where she taught Sunday school for many years. She was also a member of the Beta Nu chapter of the Delta Kappa Gamma International Honorary Teachers Organization. Sally was a woman with a good work ethic. Being the oldest of eight children, she took care of the family home growing up to help her mother and with her seven siblings. She liked playing cards, going shopping, and attending family gatherings. She provided a place so her family could grow and loved to spend time with them, especially her grandchildren. She is survived by her children, Kent and Lori Edwards of Anamosa, Michelle and Dennis Frazier of Anamosa, her grandchildren, Aubrey Edwards, Austin and Isabel Edwards, Sawyer Frazier, Mitchell Frazier, and Spencer Frazier, great-granddaughter Savannah Edwards, her siblings, Jerry and Don Starry, Kathy and Randy Sauer, Linda and John Krager, and Terry Schmidt, a sister-in-law, Teresa Catlett of Indiana, a brother-in-law, Gary Thompson, from Wichita Falls, Texas. In addition to her husband, she was preceded in death by her parents, a brother, Gary, sisters, Jane Madgel and Janice Thompson, and brother-in-law, Vince Schmidt. Charlene Char G. Manuel, 83, of Mason City, formerly of Anamosa, passed away June 13 in Mason City. Funeral services, Friday, June 18, at the Gotch Funeral Home in Anamosa. Visitation, noon to 2, with services at 2 on Friday. Burial will follow at the Riverside Cemetery in Anamosa. A celebration of life gathering will be hosted by the family following the burial at the VFW in Anamosa. A graveside burial will also be held in Carroll at a later date. Survivors include her children, Robert and Donna Sherbrown of Spirit Lake, Terry and Brian Heck of Clear Lake, Pam and Galen Cray of Monticello, and Jeff Manuel of Fredericksburg, Virginia, daughter-in-law Patty Manuel of Olin, son-in-law Kevin Posekany, P-O-S-E-K-A-N-Y, of Cedar Rapids, 14 grandchildren, 17 great-grandchildren, and one great-great-granddaughter. Also her brother, Donald Reisberg of Halber, and sisters, Shirley Fleskies of Highlands Ranch, Colorado, Carolyn Dick Donovan of Des Moines, and Jenny Walsh of Marblehead, Massachusetts. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband Jay in 1977, and her husband Jack in 2014, brother Dwayne Reisberg, sisters Phyllis Reisberg and Bonnie Tyne, son Brad Manuel, two daughters, Linda Manuel and Diane Posicani, niece Jamie McCulloch, and nephew Brad Fleskes. Betty Jane Layton, that's L-A-T-O-N, age 95, of Texas, formerly of Cedar Rapids, died Wednesday, June 9, in Fort Worth, Texas. Services will be held later in July. Arrangements, the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home. Brenda Leonard Lucasco, age 68, of Cedar Rapids, died Monday, June 14, at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. Visitation, Monday, June 21, 9 to 11 a.m., at St. Mark's United Methodist Church in Cedar Rapids. Service to follow at 11 a.m. Non-vaccinated guests are requested to wear masks. The service will be live streamed on the Facebook page for St. Mark's United Methodist Church. Inurnment will take place at a later date at the Woodlawn Cemetery in Toledo. Brenda was born March 21, 1953, in Long Beach, California, the daughter of Lang L.J. Leonard and Elizabeth Barnett Bates. She graduated from South Tama County High School and earned her master's degree in social work from the University of Iowa. Brenda worked as a licensed independent social worker. From 1979 to 1991, she worked for the Iowa Department of Human Services. In the early 90s, Brenda was MSW-LISW for Geriatric Mental Health at St. Luke's. Following St. Luke's, she was an LISW at Four Oaks in Family Therapy. Brenda then was part of the largest managed behavioral health care companies, Magellan Health Services of Iowa, which is now Amerigroup. She served on the emergency response team that traveled to Camp Pendleton, Oceanside, and other locations. Brenda enjoyed participating in several book clubs, including the Ernest and Julio Hemingway Book Club, Red Bucket Book Club, and St. Mark's Book Club. She was a devout member of St. Mark's United Methodist Church. Her family and friends will especially miss her razor-sharp wit and adventurous spirit. Brenda's family would like to extend a special thank you to Dr. Michael J. Goodhart and Anna Conroy from Gynecologic Oncology at the Holden Comprehensive Center. Survivors include her sons, Sean and Naomi Leonard of Cedar Rapids, and Bryce Lucasco of Dallas, Texas. Her grandchildren, Braxton Leonard, Anthony Leonard, her sisters Nancy and Mike Perk of Toledo, and Sharon Leonard of Cedar Rapids, as well as many nieces, nephews, and extended family members. She was preceded in death by her parents, L.J. Leonard and Elizabeth Bates, her stepfather, Jack Bates, stepmother, Eris Leonard, and a brother, Terry Leonard. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Leaders, Believers, and Achievers. Mary Ann Ryan, age 87, formerly of Fairbank, passed away at the Western Home Communities in Cedar Falls on June 12. She came into this world February 11, 1934, the daughter of Alfred and Florence Vessler Recker in Earlville, Iowa. She was the fourth of nine children. She attended school at the Stanley Public Schools. After graduation, she was joined in marriage to John Fay Ryan on November 8, 1952, at Sacred Heart Church in Olwine. Eight children were born to this union. Mary Ann grew up on her parents' farm and, after her marriage, continued with the farm life until her move into Fairbank, where she worked at Woods Construction and the Chalet Supper Club in Fairbank from 1971 until 1980. She also sold Electrolux vacuums, water conditioners, and Shackley products. She obtained her life insurance license and was affiliated with Bankers Life Insurance of Waterloo until her retirement. She was a member of the Immaculate Conception Church in Fairbank, where she enjoyed singing in the church choir. She made frequent destination trips with all of her children living in different areas of the country to see her many grandchildren. She also loved dancing and attended many area dances with friends. She is survived by her children, Jack and Pam Ryan of Boone, North Carolina, Terry McIntosh Golly of Williamsburg, Lori and Ernie Brickman and Kelly and Susan Ryan of Fairbank, Peggy Ryan of Pueblo, Colorado, Denise and Chad Toby, and Michelle and Toby Tutton. 21 grandchildren, Jamie Ryan, Ross and Jennifer Ryan, Melissa McIntosh, Matt and Abby Golly, Tony Golly, Jenny Schultz, Heather and Kyle Reeves, Michaeline and Shane McClinton, Dustin Brickman, Michael P. Ryan, Elizabeth Escobedo, Ryan and Patrick Murray, Keith and Kate Ryan, Alyssa Ritchie, Michael Ritchie, Bryce Toby, Shannon and Ashley Toby, two brothers-in-law, two sisters-in-law, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, a son, Kirk Francis Ryan, grandson, Bart Allen McIntosh, former husband, John Fay Ryan, three brothers, Carl Recker, Ernie Recker, and Lyle Buddy Recker, two sisters, Betty Lou Reeser and Linda K. Linder, three sisters-in-law, Mary Lee Recker, Mary Lou Recker, and Marge Clayworth, and brother-in-law, Robert McIntosh. A Mass of the Resurrection will be Saturday, June 19, 10:30 a.m. at the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church in Fairbank, with lunch to follow at the Parish Center. Interment will take place at the Immaculate Conception Cemetery immediately following the service. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the Immaculate Conception Catholic Church. Shirley K. Elliott, age 79, of Harper's Ferry, died on Friday, June 11, at the Veterans Memorial Hospital in Waukon. Funeral services, Wednesday, June 16, 11 a.m., St. Patrick Catholic Church in Waukon. Burial, Mount Olivet Cemetery in Waukon. Shirley K. Hahn was born November 26, 1941, in Iowa City, daughter of Maurice and Catherine Lloyd Hahn. She was baptized and confirmed at the St. Aloysius Catholic Church in Kalmar, Iowa. After graduating from Kalmar High School, 1959, she attended Paris Academy in Cedar Rapids, obtaining her cosmetology license. In Cedar Rapids, she met the love of her life, Richard Dick Elliott, through a mutual friend at the Butterfly Cafe. They were married April 22, 1961, at the St. Aloysius Catholic Church in Kalmar. On November 21, 1967, they were blessed with the birth of their son, John. For the first 10 years of their marriage, it was Shirley who supported this young family, working as a beautician, while Dick was working to establish Elliott Jewelers. She continued to work as a beautician, operating her own salon in the back of the Elliott Jewelers building, until it was decided that some of her talents would be better utilized in the jewelry store. So off to the GIA in California she went for training in goldsmithing and diamond setting. She did additional training in Minneapolis. Her other specialty was stringing pearls, which she learned from the wife of a pearl farmer from Japan, who'd become a friend over the years in business. Shirley continued to work at least part-time in the family business until very recently. Shirley's hands were never idle. When she wasn't working at the jewelry store, she kept busy with her many hobbies, whether it be working crosswords or Sudoku puzzles, cards or cribbage, cooking or baking, knitting or crocheting. She was always doing something. She was also a stained glass artist and a basket weaver. She hand wove hundreds of baskets, signing, numbering, and dating each one. Over the years, she was an active bowler and golfer. In later years, she participated in water aerobics, led Tai Chi at the Harper's Ferry Community Center, and most notably, played on the 3-time national champion Harper's Ferry Fireflies Granny basketball team. Her faith, her family, and her friends were of the utmost importance to Shirley. She was a faithful member of St. Patrick Catholic Church in Waukon and St. Anne St. Joseph Catholic Church in Harper's Ferry. She cherished time spent with her son John and his family, as well as her sister Mary and her family, and the rest of her nieces and nephews too. A friend recently described her best, saying she is, quote, an amazing example of love, kindness, and fun. Survivors include her husband, Dick Elliott of Harper's Ferry, son John and wife Shelley Elliott of Waukon, two granddaughters, Miranda and Lauren, two sisters-in-law, a sister, nieces and nephews, and many friends. She was preceded in death by her parents and two brothers, Raymond Jim Hahn and William Bill Hahn. Casket bearers will be Jim Hahn, Jeb Lynch, Jamie Lynch, Dale Rubish, Pat Hart, and Dan Dank. Honorary casket bearers will be Jan Kemp Eisen, Carol Alderdice, and the Fireflies basketball team. Memorials may be sent in Shirley's name to the St. Patrick's School in Waukon. Janet E. Feuerbach, age 92, of Iowa City, died Monday, June 14, at the Solon Nursing Care Center. Funeral services, June 18, 11 a.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Iowa City. There will be a visitation from 9:30 a.m. until services at the church. Sunday parking ordinance will be in effect for the streets near the church. Following burial at Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City, family and friends are invited for a reception to be held at the Pleasant Valley Golf Course beginning at 1. Memorial donations can be made in Janet's memory to either the Regina Foundation or Iowa Public Television. Janet's family includes her children and their spouses, Carla and Carl Ruschek, and Carrie and Alita Feuerbach. Grandchildren, great-granddaughters, and her sister-in-law, Grace Wise. She was preceded in death by her parents, husband Darold, brother Dale Johnson and wife Dorothy Dott, and brothers and sisters-in-law, Donnie and Betty Albers, Milford and Ethel Wardenberg, and Keith Wise. Harold James Jim LaRue, age 94, of rural Oxford, died Wednesday, December 2nd, 2020, at the Crestview Care Center in West Branch. Services celebrating Jim's life will take place on Sunday, June 20, from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Oxford United Methodist Church, with the Reverend Terry Belts concluding with a few words. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations can be made to the Oxford United Methodist Church or the charity of your choice. The Reverend Donald L. Berg, age 86, of Decorah, died Sunday, January 10, at Bartle OES Home in Decorah. Celebration of Life Service, Saturday, June 19, at 1 p.m. at the Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Decorah, Pastor Amy Larson officiating. Interment, Union Prairie Cemetery in rural Decorah. Don is survived by his wife, Barbara, son John and Lori Berg of Ames, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, sister-in-law, and many friends and family. Bell Stool Funeral Home in Decorah is serving the family. Curtis Reiso, that's R-E-I-S-O, age 88 of Decorah, died Thursday, August 20th, 2020, at the Wellington Place in Decorah following a short illness. Celebration of Life Service will be held Tuesday, June 22, 10:30 a.m. in the main hall of the Center for Faith and Life on the Luther College campus. A reception will follow at Bent Doll Commons. James A. Jim Schala. A funeral mass for James A. Jim Schala of 87 years old of Kelowna will take place Wednesday, June 16, 10 a.m., Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Richmond. Burial with full military honors will follow. James Allen Schala was born April 10, 1934 in Washington, Iowa, the son of Jesse and Blanche Schala. He graduated from Kelowna High School in 1952 and joined the U.S. Army in 1953. February 11, 1956, he was united in marriage to Annette Toman at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Riverside. Jim was a carpenter with local carpenters, Local 1260. He was a member of Holy Trinity Catholic Church, Richmond AM Vet Post 107, and the Kelowna Volunteer Fire Department. Jim played taps for funerals and Memorial Day services for over 70 years. He enjoyed golfing, bowling, chocolate, reading, and visiting Civil War battlefields. Survivors include his wife, Annette of Kelowna, three children, Tom Shala of Kelowna, Peggy and Tom Dua of Kelowna, and Sue and J.D. Woolrab of Ainsworth, seven grandchildren, nine great-grandchildren, and his brother, Jesse and Elma Shala of Crown Point, Indiana. Preceding Jim in death were his parents, infant sisters, Joanne and Janice, and a sister, Jean Fowler. Roy Eric Rick Carlson, age 86 of Decorah, passed away March 13. A celebration of life service will be held Saturday, June 19, 11 a.m., in the main hall of the Center for Faith and Life on the Luther College campus. Burial will take place at the Lutheran Cemetery in Decorah. Visitation to greet the family will begin at 10 a.m., 1 hour before the service. Rick is survived by his wife of 58 years, Cynthia. His daughters, Erica and Charlie, Angela and Jeff, and Sarah and PJ. His grandchildren, a brother, brother-in-law, and many nieces and nephews. Rick was preceded in death by his parents, sister Astrid, brother-in-law Ivor, sister-in-law and brother-in-law Carolyn and John. And James Lewis Tim Tessar, that's T-E-S-A-R, age 76 of Springville, passed away Sunday, June 13th at the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. Family will greet friends from 4 to 7 Thursday, June 17th at the Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Marion. Funeral Mass, 10:30 a.m. Friday, June 18th at the St. Isidore Catholic Church in Springville, where an additional visitation will take place 1 hour prior to Mass. Burial with military honors will follow at the Springville Cemetery in Springville. Jim was born November 3rd, 1944 in Iowa City to Lewis and Gladys Doskosil Tessar. Spent his childhood in rural Springville and graduated from Springville High School. Jim enlisted in the U.S. Air Force in 1965, serving honorably through 1969. August 20, 1966, he was united in marriage to Dolores Dory Cray. After the Air Force, Jim and Dory returned home to Iowa, and he entered the workforce at Aulis Chalmers. Jim also worked at Harnish Fegger and Evergreen Packaging through the years, and farmed until he retired in 2013. He was a member of the Knights of Columbus, Council 5390. Jim loved to help everyone from neighbors to friends and to family. He loved attending his grandkids' events and spending time with family. Jim will be greatly missed by all who knew and loved him. Jim is survived and lovingly remembered by his wife of nearly 55 years, Dory Tessar of Springville, his three children, Terry and Kathy Tessar of Urbandale, Lori and Sean Moss of Mount Vernon, and Amy and Brad Jansen of Marion, seven grandchildren, one brother, one sister, and a host of many extended family members, including nieces, nephews, and cousins. He was preceded in death by his parents and one brother. In lieu of flowers, memorials in Jim's memory may be made to either Hall Perrine Cancer Center in Cedar Rapids or the Dennis and Donna Oldorf Hospice House of Mercy in Hiawatha. Gosh, that's a lot of obituaries. We have just a little time. I'm going to jump to the community letters on the opinion page. First one is from Dennis Burrier of Hiawatha, and he writes, I read the article in the Gazette on alcohol sales at University of Iowa football games. I can't believe that with 69,250 people at the stadium, they can drink alcohol 6 hours before and during the game, and I think that's the way to bring in more money. The police and highway patrol should make everyone driving after the game take a breathalyzer before leaving and driving out on the way home. I suppose the next stupid plan by athletics director Gary Barta is to sell drugs and marijuana too. Next one comes from James McNeil III of Cedar Rapids, and he writes, Recently, Governor Kim Reynolds called for an investigation into news that refugee children were transported to Iowa and placed with volunteer sponsor families. This after the governor famously said these children were, quote, not our problem, and refused to give federal authorities permission to bring them here. I wonder when we can expect Reynolds to call for a similar investigation into how Iowa became one of the worst states in the nation for COVID-19 cases per capita, leading to over 6,000 deaths, while she played politics and resisted a statewide mask mandate until the hospitals filled and she had no choice. Our governor appears to be more concerned about refugee children being helped against her will than she is about keeping her constituents safe. I hope we all remember where her priorities lie when election time comes around. And that's all the time we have today for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Wednesday, June 16, 2021. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. I've been your reader, Mary Francis. Have a great day.